WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but
we have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9. WATD. Hope you are enjoying this this gift from the gods. I know most times we complain about having a rainy day, but knowing that they have been so far and few in between, it was kind of nice to see the skies open up today. So, just that quick note from the host. Quick rundown of today's show. We actually, after we do a quick check of what's happening out on the roadways one final time, we'll speak with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan. It's been a while since we've had a chance to speak with the mayor. And we're doing it at an auspicious time as the mayor this evening. Now, I have baited the hook several different ways to try to lure him in here, but he's just such a busy guy. Tonight, it so happens that he has an appointment with the Brockton City Council. As folks may or may not know, that there is a confirmation conversation happening with the council in regards to new police chief Brenda Perez, who will be speaking before the city council this evening and should get confirmed. There should be no, I don't foresee any issues, but who am I? I don't have a crystal ball as of yet. So we'll talk with the mayor about that. Kind of get an update as to what's going on with some of the city projects. The downtown corridor has long been a conversation as to different developments. It's been an ongoing endeavor to try to rebuild the city center. We'll find out where things stand, economic development, and the drought. How is the drought affecting the city of Brockton? And I did see some things on a few social media platforms. I'm not sure if there's any truth to them or not, but in regards to that, the state may help in regards to the possible purchase of Aquaria. That's the desalination plant located down in Dighton, something that the city was asked by the state to find an alternative water source resource. As opposed to Silver Lake, which they have had ownership of or been able to use for well over a century. So we'll talk with him about that and some other things. He also actually successfully once again ran the Falmouth Road Race this weekend. So we'll get details on that maybe sometimes. I think the missus also joined him as well. So we'll chat with him about that. Following the mayor, we will speak with Richard Rosen, proud sponsor of Monday Night Talk. McGuigan's Pub, The Patio, as well as, let's not forget other sponsors, Tiny and Sons Glass, Peter Brown and the family. We love our sponsors, and we appreciate our sponsors being kind enough to spend money to invest in this particular community program. But Richard stops by, and we check in with him to find out what's new as we're heading into the fall. Let's not forget, I believe they have a road race coming up in September. So we give Richard a few moments to talk a little bit about the annual road race that has been so successful over the years. Hour number two. Now, folks who have paid attention to this radio program for well over 10, 11 years with me behind the microphone, it has to be an important reason. There has to be some kind of reason to give an hour for a particular topic. I think that our topic this evening, which deals with infrastructure, this is the South Shore Infrastructure Priorities for Sustainable Growth for 2030. This so happens to be a report that was put together by the folks of the South Shore Chamber. It was also in conjunction with, it wasn't just the chamber, but also the South Shore Economic Development Corporation. Two of them together able to have this report put together. And coming in to discuss some of the finer points in regards to this particular report, Peter Foreman, CEO, President of the South Shore Chamber of Commerce, as well as Joe Sullivan. Yes, another Sullivan on the show this evening. A former Braintree mayor. He is also, I got to get this straight, I'm not sure if he's co-chairman or chairman of the South Shore Chamber's Transportation Advisory Group. In the report itself, he's named as a co-chair and a chair. So he's a little bit of both. But that's all coming up. And we're going to talk about this report, and we're also going to take your phone calls at some point in the show.
If this thing called civilization was going to end, I think it would have ceased during one of the two world wars. My grandparents never gave up. They worked and lived till the bitter end, which wasn't bitter at all. Actually, it was sweet. Their life was sweet. I want my life the same. I want to work, coach my kids' soccer team, go out to eat after, and then come home to my bed where I can rest my bones. Then get up and do it all again tomorrow. That's what I want, that's what I'm working for, and that is my American dream. I can't do it alone. I need you. We need each other. We're all in this together, and together we can have our American dreams. As long as we're willing to do what is necessary to survive on this marble called Earth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and now New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back in here for our very, very first segment. Now, normally, traditionally, the staple to open the radio show usually is the State House Report, but we try to mix things up and have different folks. Again, always trying to flip-flop back and forth between party affiliations because we never want anybody to think that I am tied to one party or the other. Joining us, gentleman who has long been coined the unofficial co-host of Monday Night Talk. When Richard Rosen isn't the co-host of Monday Night Talk, he is the 50th mayor of the city of Brockton. And I think he just successfully, once again, ran the Falmouth Road Race this past weekend. We have Robert Sullivan joining us. Mayor, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Hey, Kevin. I will give you the City Hall report instead of the State House report, but thank you for having me on. And I don't know if you called what I did yesterday running, but I did complete it, and that was 35 years in a row of completing the Falmouth Road Race. So I'm kind of type A, as my wife said, but it was a little personal streak I wanted to try to continue.
Yeah, and you didn't run it alone. I think the missus ran it with you, right?
She's a lot faster than I am. But we had a lot of good folks from Brockton running. And I know Bamsey had a team, and Signature Brockton Hospital, I saw they had a team there as well. And a lot of good charitable organizations running. And a lot of folks and friends from out the county and the Commonwealth. So it was a great day. It was hot, though.
Yeah, I will one of these days get you to be in here for a whole show. I know it's mission impossible because there's so many things that are going on. And being that you preside over a city of nearly, if not more than 100,000 folks who need you to kind of be on top of the different things, whether it's business-related, whether it's community-related, whether it's department-related, one of these days we'll have you in studio. But you tonight have a very special mission as you head into City Council chambers, just to think a floor up, as Brenda Perez will become the city's newest top cop, if all goes well with confirmation, right?
Yeah, I mean, Lieutenant Brenda Perez, who's just a wonderful, wonderful person and has dedicated years of service on the Brockton Police Department, and also for the nation as a military service member. And she went to Brockton High School and graduated, and I'm really pleased. to be able to go before the 11-member City Council tonight and respectfully ask for their final confirmation to make her the permanent chief. It's been a wonderful endeavor to work with Chief Perez as the acting chief, and I truly look forward to hopefully their confirmation tonight, and she'll be the permanent chief, and we can continue to do great things together to make the city safe and wonderful for everybody that lives and works in the city of Champions.
I always think that one of the cornerstones of any mayor is being able to choose different folks to take over key departments. What went into choosing Lieutenant Perez to become your next police chief?
Yeah, so what I did is as soon as I became mayor is I wanted to hopefully get the best and brightest and just wonderful, dedicated public servants to lead our departments and set the example for the wonderful, dedicated folks that work in each specific department. I mean, we're in the people business, and we need to make sure that, you know, we present to the constituents, the residents, the taxpayers, the business owners in the best light. So, you know, I have always had the idea of having an interview committee, and that's exactly what I did for this endeavor as well. We actually even brought a retired police chief from Hanover, Larry Sweeney, to the table, and we paid him as a consultant to bring some expertise of law enforcement. But really had some wonderful, dedicated, Brockton police officers apply for the job, and I really applaud each and every one of those individuals that did. But, you know, Brenda stood out, and, we offered her the job. I offered her the job, and, you know, the city solicitor worked on a contract for her, and, you know, the city councils all know her, and, she's just a very likable person and a great leader, and she commands respect among the department, and, it's a wonderful thing, and, you know, cross your fingers. I'm really hopeful. We did the same thing last week for my permanent HR director, Sandy Charton, as well. So, you know, I know that the city councils, because I served 14 years up there, I mean, they take this extremely serious. You know, they want to make sure that we appoint the right people. But this is someone that I stand 100% behind, and she's going to just do some wonderful, wonderful things as leader of the Brockton Police Department.
Yeah, and it wasn't too long ago that actually you had to pick a new fire chief, too, correct?
Yeah, Brian Ardelli is just another great guy leading the fire department. He actually is the only one that sat for the fire chief exam. So my choice, I would have went with Brian anyhow. He's a wonderful leader, wonderful mm-hmm. guy, commands respect in Plymouth County. We actually just had at the heads of Chief Nardelli, we just had all the Plymouth County fire chiefs here at the main library in downtown Brockton. We had a lot of police officers as well to talk about active shooter training. And so, you know, I'm fortunate to have a talent pool here in Brockton, and we're continuing to advertise. If anybody listening and wants to work for the City of Champions, you know, go on our website, and, there's ample opportunity to be considered.
How important is it, these two key public safety officials, putting them in place? I mean, what do you see for the future of the city when it comes to their leadership, when it comes to if there's any major incidents that happen in the city, whether it's on the criminal level, whether it's emergencies around the city, fire, natural disasters? How important is it to have people that you can trust in those roles?
Well, number one, my mantra is collaboration is key, right? We're better together. We need to work together. We don't all have the exact same expertise. I don't have it in my fabric to be a police officer or a firefighter, but I can tell you that Chief Brenda Perez and Chief Brian Ardelli are unbelievably talented individuals in their own professional endeavors. And it's evidenced by the fact that we're working right now on a $100 million public safety building, right? $98 million public safety building, which is going to be a city block. If you're familiar with Brockton, it's going from Highland Street to West Elm Street. It's the old Brockton High School location on Warren Ave. And so I've been able to sit in on countless meetings with Chief Perez and Chief Nardelli and Steve Hook, who is Director of Brockton Emergency Management, and Ted Medeiros from our IT, because it's going to be made up of four different departments there. And the beauty of that is IT will leave Brockton High, and it's going to free up classroom space for the kids up there and the staff. So I can tell you right now what's important is to make sure that we're all on the same page. We understand that, you know, we have a tough job, but we are public servants. And, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, leading the city of Brockton or you're leading a hospital or leading a college. We are truly in the people business. My people business is $500 million a year city budget known as the city of Brockton. But excited about tonight, Kevin.
Yeah, you basically anticipated my segue, because my segue was talking a little bit about the latest with the city center, downtown corridor. We know that's been a point of emphasis by leaders like yourself, stakeholders around the city, community leaders, to try to improve the city center, to draw folks there, and having that public safety building or that parcel of land at the top of Legion Parkway is going to be, I think, key. Where does that project stand at this particular time?
Yeah, I mean, we're working diligently right now. We actually have done friendly takings of three different residential properties on Highland Street. We were able to do friendly takings as opposed to hostile takings. And so we own the three buildings. They'll be coming down within the next 2 weeks. We already severed the trees there. So it's literally going to be a city block. And it really is just unbelievable because the two-way traffic has been approved, Kevin. As you know, Warren Ave has always been one way for a long period of time from Pleasant Street all the way to Belmont Street, Route 123. So we're going to have two-way traffic on Warren Ave, which is a game changer. The downtown area, I mean, I made a decision not to pause construction during COVID-19, and it's paid off dividends. You know, the fact that we have three commuter stops, and we have the downtown area, of course, and we have Campello and Montello, and you know, the amenities. We just had one of the first black-owned brew pubs in the Commonwealth open up in Brockton Pier, which is at 121 Main Street, the old Kresge's building, which is a brand-new facility, really high-end, beautiful apartment building right now. And the downstairs is Brockton Pier. And around the corner, we have Enzo Gallery and the Milton Museum. So you don't have to go to Boston right now, Kevin, to check out some really high-quality artwork and you know, Remington and Picasso and Renoir. So, you know, we are working as diligently as we can with our partners, Downtown Business Association, led by Mary Waldron, and Bow Colony Planning Council, and the BRA, which is the Brockton Redevelopment Authority, which is a quasi-agency for the city, and, of course, Chris Cooney and the Metro South Chamber of Commerce. So it's all hands on deck, and, you know, I grew up here in the city of Brockton. I'm excited about the future of Brockton, and there really is a sense of a renaissance going on right now with so much construction, and it's really great.
Being you and I being individuals who grew up in Brockton, the one thing that the city hasn't had in years is a movie theater. Is there any developer who's willing to invest and put a movie theater, whether it be in the city center or even at Westgate Mall, or is that something that hasn't necessarily shown its cards yet?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an advocate for it. I really have been as a city councilor at large for 14 years, and you know, as mayor, it's something that I've always brought up to the powers that be, different developers that come in. And, you know, I don't think that there's a sense that the downtown area would be the right location. I've met with the principals over at the Westgate Mall as well. I think that, you know, there is still a need for a movie theater. I know some of the naysayers say not with Netflix and mm-hmm. the different things you can rent on TV and cable. But I'd love to do it. It's something that I would be proud to do. And I'm going to continue to have conversation. And you know, one thing that I've done since mayor, Kevin, is to market the city. And it's not just marketing to developers here in the Commonwealth, but I'm going all across the nation. And, you know, I've actually had a couple people fly in here that are really high net worth individuals. Some of them own professional sporting teams, hockey team and baseball team. And, you know, they're impressed with what they see. I mean, Brockton is a wonderful, diverse community. And unfortunately, it's a city, right? It's the only city in Plymouth County. So, you know, when you hear about it often on the news, it's about a crime area or a drug or something like that. But, you know, they're not telling the good story about all the kids that graduated last year from Brockton High that went to Ivy League schools, or, you know, the 52% of the kids from the charter school, New Heights Charter School, that graduated, and I was there that day, and they also graduated with an associate's degree from Massasoit Community College. So, you know, we have a talent pool here. We have a lot of manufacturing. We have the VA hospital and Good Sam Medical Center and Neighborhood Health Center and Signature Brockton Hospital. So, you know, I just need to continue to market it like a business and create a business plan and exercise, you know, a business plan that's going to be a recipe for success and keep building upon that.
Again, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, one of two Sullivans that will appear on this radio show this evening. Mayor, as you know, actually we have a former Braintree Mayor Joe Sullivan, who is serving as a chair of the South Shore Chamber's Transportation Advisory Council, and they're going to be in talking about an infrastructure plan that has been put together. So it's the evening of Sullivans, so to speak, along with
I will say that the former mayor of Braintree is just a wonderful person, great public servant.
Stand-up guy.
He's been really a great mentor to me. And you know, my mom graduated from Braintree High. She's a womp, so I always tell Joe that. But
You know, he is someone that is a public servant his whole career, and I'm glad he's going to be on the show. Can never have too many Sullivans on your show, Kevin.
Never. And you kind of talked about talent. I want to say that I saw some images online on social media where you had a chance to rub shoulders with some second-generation ball players who you know, their parents, their fathers, you know, led the Red Sox to world champions. What was it like to see such offspring playing for the Brockton Rocks this summer?
Awesome. I mean, awesome. I mean, I'm a baseball guy. I love baseball. And, you know, if even if you don't, to be able to catch a family-friendly environment at Campanelli Stadium, which literally directly abuts Brockton High School, and, you know, the prices are so reasonable, and it's just great entertainment. It's similar baseball, I'd say, to the Cape Cod League. And the fact that we had legacy players, I mean, I met Keith Folk's son, and I met Keith himself, and Manny Ramirez was here, and I met his son, and Gary Sheffield's son I met, and Gary I met. Didn't get a chance to meet Big Poppy or Pedro, but I met their sons, and you know, it was just great, just great. And I took my kids and my wife and I went up there probably 6 games this year, and I just loved it. The environment was popping, and I can say as mayor, I've invested a lot of money into that stadium. We got great assistance from our friends in the county for CARES Act money so we could retrofit the abutting Shaw Center. So we still have those as a regional vaccine site right now with DPH. But, you know, baseball and the field is great. We're looking at other options to get some concerts in there. As you know, Kevin, you know, you're a Brocktonian.
Yep.
At one time we had Def Leppard, Brian Adams. We had Willie Nelson. We had Bob Dylan, the B-52s, Salt and Pepper. We had Jason Aldean. So there was some high-quality talent there. So, you know, we want to showcase that and kind of get that back.
So just got a couple of minutes left with you, Mayor. You know, knowing that here we are, we had a great rainstorm today. I was talking about it when we opened the show. The drought is very real, something that we've suffered through here in the region. I want to say it's been 3 of them since 2016, and we know that city of Brockton was told back in the early 90s that you have to find a secondary water source and not depend on Silver Lake. How has the city been toughing through the summer with, you know, the shortage of rain? And have you heard anything from the state in regards to maybe possibly getting assistance on purchasing a quarry, or is that just something that's, you know what, you got a contract with them and you're sticking with it?
Well, we do have a contract, and you're right. We were mandated for a secondary water source, and, you know, the summer's been tough everywhere. My own grass looks like straw right now on my front lawn, but, you know, it's a serious thing. I mean, water's a high-quality quantity, and it's an asset. So the fact that we are a customer right now of Aquaria, the desal plant, you know, executed contract by previous mayors. And as this mayor, you know, I need to really examine all options. The state and, you know, the DEP has made it clear we will need to have a secondary water source. So, you know, we recently submitted just for consideration by the state, you know, if and when we ever came to the option to try to buy it, would we get any state assistance? And, you know, that was an application we submitted, very similar to submitting the MSBA application to try to get Brockton High School rehab. You know, we have to look at all options. I also have spoken to some city councilors. I'd love the MWRA to come in and talk to us as well. When I was a city councilor, myself and Councilor Large Farwell filed a resolve. So, you know, we need to continue to really look at the cost of it, the amenity, and how we get to where we need to go. Because as a lawyer, I can tell you, eventually contracts expire, right? So we need to make sure we do our due diligence now. And, you know, there's a lot of rumors out there that Brockton is buying this or buying that. And I can tell you that we are optioning everything, meaning looking at every option, having my city solicitor and all the lawyers that work for City Hall examine everything, because we need to. We'd be short-sighted if we didn't. But I know there's a lot of town managers and town administrators that have been calling me, asking me, and I can just tell them the truth. You know, we need to continue to look at all options, and we'll do that. And, you know, a decision needs to be rendered at some point, but it will be a collaborative approach with the city council, all 11 members.
Well, Mayor, we want to thank you again. We know you're busy, so we appreciate you coming on when you can. Anything you want to say quickly in closing?
Well, I haven't gotten my official, you know, hat that you were going to give me.
No, it was a mug. It was a mug.
Oh, it was a mug, a hat. It keeps changing, Tachi. I don't know. But I want to thank you for having me on the show, as always. And, you know, the information you share throughout the county is just invaluable. So give my best to Mayor Sullivan, and I'll be on again soon. And in the near future, I'll drive down to the studio and see you in person.
Yeah, and then you can have my proclamation for being on the airwaves and serving the city of Brockton for 20 years.
I When you least expect it, Mr. Tachi. Least expect it. I'll see you soon, my friend. Be well. Stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. There he is, Mayor Robert Sullivan, our guest. We're going to step aside. When we come back, things are a-buzzing as we speak with Richard Rosen, local business owner. Stay tuned.
Hi, my name is Alex Bazantin, and I'm running for Plymouth County Commissioner. I am the former chairman of the Abington Conservation Commission, former Abington Water Commissioner, and now serving in my second term as Abington Selectman. I am currently serving on the executive board of the Plymouth County Advisory Board. If you would like to learn more about my candidacy, please visit my website at alexbazantin.org or follow me on Facebook. I am Alex Bazantin for Plymouth County Commissioner, and I approve this message.
When you think about a business you like, what sticks in your mind? They're efficient, everything looks professional, and they're timely. You don't need an entire marketing staff to have that for your business. You just need to contact We Print Today. Printing and copies are just the beginning. We Print Today offers professional engineering copies, scanning, emailing, fax service, UPS shipping, mailing services, rubber stamps, signs, banners, posters, and much more. Give your storefront a facelift with new posters from We Print Today. Reach your customers directly with We Print Today's mailing services. Promote your event with flyers, brochures, signs, and banners. Clean up your office space and take advantage of We Print Today's secure document shredding. When your business needs it done quickly and professionally, call We Print Today at 1-800-WPT-FAST or visit them online at weprinttoday.com. We Print Today, 66 Summer Street, Route 3A in Kingston. We Print Today, because tomorrow may be too late.
Expect the best. Three words we've lived by for over 35 years. Hi, I'm Sheldon Stewart of Stewart Painting. Have you ever wondered what goes into our tagline, Expect the Best? Well, it starts off with having great employees who provide quality service, which gives us a great reputation of standing behind our work. We also want you to have a positive experience from the moment you schedule your estimate and meet with your sales team to the final product. It's important to us, whether it's carpentry, house washing, or painting, that all of our employees are committed to your project being done on time and to your satisfaction. Our team of professionals take pride in delivering the best possible service to all of our valued customers. We expect the best, shouldn't you? To schedule your free estimate, call either of our Hyannis or Hingham offices, or to get a virtual quote, go to stuartpaint.com. And remember, Stuart Painting. Expect the best.
McGuigan's Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McGuigan's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McGuigan's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McGuigan'sPub.com.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
We return with one of our premier sponsors here on Monday Night Talk. If it wasn't for the folks who spent their money to allow us to do what we do, and that is to better inform the community at large, well, who knows what you'd be listening to. But joining us right now is Richard Rosen, who is a previous... He actually hosted this show for an hour. Did a nice job. Morgan White Jr., one of the shows that people keep asking about. We love the show. Probably one of their favorite podcasts. Richard, how are you?
I'm well, Kevin. How are you tonight?
So I hear you are back from a very, very special trip overseas.
We came back Saturday. And, you know, people talk about they go on these vacations and it was a once-in-a-lifetime trip. This was a once-in-a-lifetime trip. I just came back from Ireland. Spent a week there. Had the absolute honor and pleasure of meeting with the ambassador to Ireland, Claire Cronin. And we had an event with her on last Tuesday night, a formal event, with a special guest, a local person, Ronan Tynan, which was insane, who I was working on to try to get him to come to McGuigan's, which I think I might be able to pull it off. And then the following night, Wednesday night, last Wednesday, we had the opportunity to go to the ambassador's residence in Dublin, and with, you know, 100 of my closest friends. It was really, literally a once-in-a-lifetime trip. It was spectacular. We stayed at the Kilkay Castle, which was also pretty amazing in its own right.
So, yeah, you showed me pictures of your trip and even getting to stand behind the podium for the ambassador, and quite the trip. And folks who may not know, this is actually Claire Cronin, who's now the ambassador to Ireland. She was the 11th Plymouth District State Representative representing Brockton and Easton.
Correct. So I've known her for a long time. It was kind of funny. This trip was put together by, you know, a couple of people that said, let's go visit the ambassador. And, you know, one thing led to another. There was literally 104 people. We all didn't travel together, but we spent Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night at the Kilkay Castle, which is in Kilkenny. The castle goes back to 1190.
Goodness.
It was pretty amazing.
Just to see such history.
Yeah. So, you know, I traveled south eastern part of Ireland. 8 years ago when I was there, we traveled the west coast. So it was pretty amazing. And a lot of local people, a number of people that you know and people that you've interviewed were on the trip. So it was a distinct pleasure. It was one of the highlights ever.
So the main purpose of having you in here is just to kind of get an update as to what's going on with your two establishments. Of course, the first one was McGuigan's Pub, and so you didn't feel you had enough success with the pub. You built the patio right next door to it. How are the two establishments doing to this day?
So, you know, it's funny. Excuse me. Generally, in the summer, business slows down. July, August are generally slow. We are doing better than pre-pandemic numbers. The restaurants are busy. It hasn't slowed down. I mean, you have a slow day here or there, but years ago I stopped trying to figure out, what did we do wrong? It was not busy tonight. Business has been unbelievable. And, you know, the patio, it like anything new, and especially in the restaurant business, it takes a while to catch on. And it's caught on, and, you know, it's funny, and you and I have talked about this before. We've been in the pub 12 and a half years. Mm-hmm. I can go into the pub on any given night, and I'll know 90% of the people in there. Not by name, because you know how bad I am at names, but I know 90% of the people. On any given night, I'll go into the patio, and I don't know 10% of the people. So I wasn't sure I could do it, but I wanted to create a different business with a different clientele, and that's exactly what has happened. And it's funny to say, but downtown Whitman has, because of my restaurants, has become a destination place. A lot of people from out of town. So it's very exciting. You know, I'm not sure Danielle, my daughter, is all that happy with me, but you know, the poor kid runs both restaurants, and we have a lot of employees. But it's really been terrific, both restaurants.
I will get a little bit of lip service if I don't ask you this, because the missus loves, she's always loved going to the patio after church on Sunday. In the near future, do we see any hopes of brunch returning, or is that something that's you're still working on and you're honing it?
So we were close, and, you know, everybody in the world these days is having help issues.
Yep.
And I thought we had it. We were close. We were refining a couple of things. And, you know, one of my chefs had a physical issue and a couple other stuff. So we're back looking for some more help. It's a different ball game. And then a transition on a Sunday morning from brunch to lunch and then dinner created a problem that I was totally unaware of at the time. So we're working on that, too. But nobody wants to bring it back more than I do.
Anything new to the menu for either? I know you're somebody who always is,
you'll remove something for a while, and then you know you'll bring it back, and it's usually a season. It might be a seasonal thing, like the lobster roll. It might be Guinness beef stew. It might be something like that. What can we expect as far as the menu moving forward?
So we're back into the summer specials. Lobster rolls, just an absolutely unbelievable lobster roll. Kind of summer specials in both places. Both places have, as you know, totally different menus.
Yep.
And we have totally different specials in both places that they change, you know, on a daily basis. So, nothing drastic at the moment. But, you know, the fall will be here soon, and we'll go back to the drawing board and see what we're going to bring out.
So I know also, and we tease this at the, you know, at the opening of the show, and that is you will annually do a road race. And I believe that your road race was, at least one time or another, was mentioned as to one of the road races that the folks should take a, you know, participate in.
Yeah, a couple of years in, we were recognized by the Boston Running Club and some other organizations as being one of the best 5Ks around. That year that they were touting us, I think we had 600 people run the race, which was just
phenomenal.
Yeah, it was really overwhelming. So the road race is coming up on September 25th. Starts at noon, starts in Whitman Center, ends in Whitman Center. And, you know, we have entertainment afterwards. We have a face painter for the kids, and we have the Irish step dances, Cohane and Keneally playing live. We have food. We have liquor outside, and it's we generally have a few hundred runners, and every penny that we have ever raised has gone to local charity, with about half of it going to the Whitman Food Pantry. And we've given to Folds of Honor and Boston One Fund and a lot of veterans organizations, and then a lot of local sports organizations, teams. And it isn't just Whitman. People, you know, the local area, people approach us about, you know, a donation. And even if it's $100 or $200, you know, we consider everything and generally don't say no, as long as we still have money. But we give several thousand to the food pantry every year.
How does it make you and Kathy, your wife, and Danielle and the family back out? How do you guys feel in regards to being able to give back to the community?
What is the old saying? For whom much is given, much is expected. It's an overwhelming feeling to be able to do that year after year after year. It's just really wonderful to be able to give to these groups, organizations, to give back to the community. You know, I'm a third generation Whitman resident, so I've been around a long time, a lot longer than, you know. I've been there a long time. Danielle lives in Whitman, fourth generation Whitman resident. We've been there since the late 1800s. And it's just wonderful to be able to give back. You know, I'm the first generation in the real estate business. None of my predecessors own restaurants. So it really is gratifying. And I know that my wife and my kids they love doing what they do. And it really is kind of cool.
It is. It's always interesting if you go into the restaurant and see either your missus or see Danielle as she's working with the staff and assisting, you know, with getting meals out and stuff like that. But it's even better to know that that even your hobbies somehow play a role in the success of your business. I mean, you blessed me with probably some of the best honey on the South Shore because you are a local beekeeper. And I know we did a show on it a few months ago, but you even had a chance to bring it up when you were out over in Ireland too, right?
So it was discussed by some people while we were in Ireland, and I owe a lot of my success in beekeeping and to you. I mean, if it wasn't for you, people wouldn't know that I was a beekeeper. I mean, other than coming in and seeing it, but you produced my bee show, our award-winning bee show, I might add.
That's correct, yeah.
It was brought up. Someone on the trip had seen the latest episode and started asking me about beekeeping.
Season four,
which other people heard, and so we had some major discussions. You know, we, at my daughter's wedding, the favors were bottles of honey.
Nice.
And I was told yesterday that a girl that was at the wedding, a guest of my daughter's, her parents or her brother, was this someone tried the honey. And now they all just want to come over. They were wondering where we sold it because they all want to come over. Because it was the best honey they've ever had. You know, it's funny because when we were at breakfast in Ireland looking at, they serve honey on the table. It's not pure honey. It has additives or it's adulterated. That honey that you have right there is the purest honey you will ever have in your entire life.
Right.
And it's really good. And we're going to have another good year.
Right. And with some pollinators right from originating from Rosen's garden.
Right from my backyard.
There's nothing better than when you can add, you can taste the residuals of what's growing in someone's backyard, whether it's spaghetti squash or tomatoes or strawberries, whatever it may be. You could taste that in the honey.
So you know that, you know, you've been in my backyard and know that I have a garden. And
I do.
This year I had... I planted 22 tomato plants, and we've been harvesting them and serving them at both restaurants, along with
farm to table,
as well as basil, and the Caprese salads. It's literally from my garden, pollinated by my bees.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
It's kind of my garden has been slow. I think I need. Maybe a hive or two in the backyard to kind of stimulate growth of my garden next year.
You do need water, too.
Oh, I water it, but I've been very careful because of the drought this year.
So I have a well, and I have irrigation, and my garden gets watered frequently. So
last part of business that we have here, folks want to find out more about whether they want to, you know, they want to dine tonight or tomorrow night, or they want to go for lunch. How can they find out more information about either restaurant?
Okay, so both restaurants have their own websites, McGuigan'sPub.com, the patio at McGuigan's.com, 781-447-7333, the pub, 781-447-2525 for the patio. But more importantly, if someone wants to go online and sign up for the road race, they can do that too. Either website has the form online. So, again, you know, the road race, it's our 11th. It should be our 12th, but we took a year off because of COVID. Really would like people to sign up. And, again, all the money goes to local charities and organizations and groups. And we'd love to see them on the 25th of September.
Now, if they want to buy, they want to buy some honey, can they do that as well?
They can go to either restaurant and buy some honey. It's also available in several other locations.
Very nice.
Again, I owe it all to you.
He is Richard Rosen, local businessman here, and a proud sponsor of Monday Night Talk. Richard, as always, thank you for your sponsorship of this radio program.
It's my pleasure, Kevin.
You got it. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, we're going to talk infrastructure. South Shore Chamber of Commerce and the South Shore's the priorities for 2030. Coming up in just a moment, we have Mr. Joe Sullivan, and we have Peter Foreman in studio for 1 hour. We'll be back in just a moment. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back for hour number two. We want to thank Mayor Robert Sullivan, and we want to thank Richard Rosen for being our guest. But now the gloves are off, and so we're here to talk a little infrastructure. We're here to kind of take a gander down the road. What's going to keep our part of the Commonwealth here sustainable? And we're talking about being able to have, build homes, to be able to have good transportation, and whether it's public transportation or throughways, and also water. Water is going to be key as well. And who would I bring in
to have such a conversation. None other than the CEO and president of the South Shore Chamber of Commerce. Actually, you can hear Peter every week on the South Shore's Morning News with Rob Hakala. We have Peter Forman, who's here. Peter.
Kevin, thank you. Welcome. Glad to be here.
I think you've been here before. I've had you, not in studio, but I think you've called in.
I'm sure, yes.
I think you've been a participant, and we had kind of like a group hug, and you were part of the conversation to add in, add your piece into the puzzle.
I'm good filler.
Yes, yes, you are. And of course, former Braintree mayor and chairman of the South Shore Chamber's Transportation Advisory Group, as he's a part of the piece of the puzzle to this report. Joe Sullivan. Joe, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
I'm glad to be a piece of the puzzle. Kevin, great to be with you. We had some really nice times when I was mayor. I was here quite a bit. And also we put together a mayor's group for a period of time with Sue Kay. And we
Bill
had
Carpenter,
Tommy Cope come in, Bill
Cope.
Carpenter. Yeah, it was had some good conversations about the region. And here we are tonight again to talk about our region.
And folks, just so you know, this isn't just this part of the show. There is going to be an interactive portion to this show, maybe sometime after 7:30. But we want to first put forth some of the key components to this particular infrastructure report that was put together. And I believe that this is a report that was being brought to you not only by the Chamber, but I believe the South Shore Economic Development Corporation. And again, this is something that we talk about priorities for sustainable growth. These are all the key components for us to have quality of life here in the South Shore and be able to have folks to have a home, to be able to get from point A to point B without congestion. And also, of course, we want to make sure that we have plenty of water for our further economic development. Peter, kind of give us the nuts and bolts as to how did this report come to be?
It's all part of a larger economic plan put together by the South Shore Chamber about 7 years ago, looking at the region. And this is something we started to do soon after Greenbush was finished. The Chamber had always been involved with transportation in and out of Boston. But we started looking at the region wondering, how do we fit in? A lot of this comes from, it's not all about just building wealth. It's about building stronger communities. It's the quality of life you mentioned. And for me, the passion is more opportunity for the people I used to see day in and day out when I worked in Boston. And I would see this, you're stuck in that traffic and you'd look over at all these cars and you realize, man, we're all killing ourselves because these are where the jobs are that people want. And while the jobs might have been satisfying, quality of life was tough when you're putting in 3-4 hours or more a day commuting. So when I came to the Chamber, the attraction of the Chamber's work for me was, how do you build more opportunity down here so people can have fuller careers, more rewarding jobs without that long commute? So we began looking at this and realized about 6 years ago when we first did our report that the big challenge facing the South Shore was our age. We were older and growing faster than the other parts of metropolitan Boston. And what that means is you end up having a smaller workforce that's able to attract or create jobs down here. We also found that some of our key industries were contracting, so we were going to lose some of the good jobs we had here. That was largely in financial services, some in retail. And so we got about this mission of, how do we make this region more economically competitive so people have more opportunities? And it began with, we've got to draw younger people to this area.
Yep.
And we've got to help build up our community so it's the more of what we all enjoy here would be evident to people who don't live here, that it's high services, high quality of life, well-run communities with good services. That takes tax base, that takes cooperation. But we knew it was people, so we started with housing. We've been working on diversifying the housing stock on the South Shore to attract younger professionals out of Boston, keep some of the downsizing baby boomers. And as we've been going around for a few years promoting the types of housing that we think are important. We kept hearing a lot of the arguments against housing. Most of them don't hold up. Most of them were just people who didn't want any change throwing up any argument. The arguments that did resonate and we thought had merit were infrastructure. What will new housing do to traffic? What will it do to water supplies? We thought those were valid in many communities. So we went about looking at what our infrastructure priorities would be. Turns out we think the biggest is going to be water supply, water management. And then the next is transportation. And we had an advisory group. Joe is an expert on transportation. He chaired the Joint Committee of Transportation in the legislature. We were both up in the State House at the same time. I knew little about transportation. He knew everything.
He does.
So he chaired the committee on that, and we put together this report combining mostly transportation and water management, setting an agenda for the chamber. And that's really its primary purpose, set an agenda for where the business community needs to, where we think it needs to devote a lot of attention to move some of these issues. And it will be followed up by years of specific projects, advocacy on legislation, programs to improve the infrastructure capacity here to support economic growth.
Joe, let's talk transportation. Sure. I know that's your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm an expert. I have some working knowledge about it, but I'm not sure I'm an expert.
Well, let's put it this way. As many times that I've had conversations with you, I feel also that you're very well-versed when it comes to transportation issues.
Sure.
Nobody has all the answers to solve some of the transportation woes we're seeing, especially a perfect example today, first day without the Orange Line, switching over to shuttles. How is long-term, the public transportation going to play a role when it comes to infrastructure priorities for the South Shore?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think I want to underline a few things before we get into a little bit more detail, just in terms of what Peter raised. He mentioned about the establishment of the Greenbush Line. Mm. And that's when I first became active, not only as chair of transportation, but as a member of the committee even before I became chair, in terms of the importance of, or at least appreciating and understanding the importance of Greenbush and having that be of service to the immediate South Shore. Middleborough and Plymouth lines were coming online. Greenbush was, as we know, controversial, but also critically important to having an element of public transportation to an area of the state that had not seen it before. It had actually been reduced many, many years ago, back in the late 50s. Peter mentioned how after Greenbush, this became infrastructure, along with housing, became kind of the South Shore Chamber mantra. You know, the chamber is about advocacy for business community, but it's also about people. And I think what this report reflects is, our commitment to the South Shore from a standpoint of Greenbush, I think, if you look at it, is a microcosm of what we can do in terms of its establishment. And I'll point specifically to Weymouth Landing. Which is Weymouth Landing East Braintree Station. Now it's the Landing. We kind of rebranded it over the years. But what happened was having Greenbush Station there, that landing station, allowed us to do an economic development package in the Landing that today is a very vibrant area with new residencies, as well as new retail, new restaurants, and really an active center. And prior to that, it had lost its vibrancy. And so using that as an example, I think if you look at our report, and I think it's fairly detailed to your earlier point, it doesn't have all the answers, but in terms of some cornerstone pieces, thinking about transportation from a standpoint of intra-regional activities, as Peter said, not north-facing necessarily, thinking about east-west, thinking about the water resource management, which is what we need. We have a lot of independent water supplies here on the South Shore. We need to somehow either strengthen them or grow their capacity. There have been previous conversations with the Mass Water Resource Authority, and I always think that that's an opportunity for the region, not particularly for certain communities, but for the region itself. Union Point would be a good example of that. Targeted development areas where we've really focused on Route 44 in Plymouth, Route 3A from Hingham from Quincy, north, south, down to Hingham, looking at the establishment of South Coast Rail from New Bedford. I mean, South Coast Rail from New Bedford Paul River, which was discussed for a long period of time, is ready to commence service next year, and that's going to come through our region connecting into Boston. And so identifying areas where we can do some strong economic development, targeted areas, opportunity areas as part of this report as well. And then the last piece is the regional collaboration, which is really needed. You know, I served as mayor of my tremendous community of Braintree, fortunate to serve for 12 years, first mayor. Did a lot of work with Tommy Koch and Sue Kay and Bob Hedlund before I left. You know, there's opportunities to have those conversations where we can regionally benefit from those conversations, but the there's a bit of a parochialism when it comes to specific communities. And I'm not saying we're ever going to rid ourselves of that, because each community has its own characteristics mm-hmm. and its own priorities and benefits. But there is an ability to have a more of a regional collaboration on what's important for our region. And that includes housing. That includes trying to raise the quality of life. And in doing so, hopefully implement a strong transportation program that's going to grow the economic opportunities here for the South Shore. It is transportation without the ability to move people and product. We are not going to have a region that's going to grow in a way to be responsive to future generations. And that's really what this report lays out. It's a roadmap to 2030, as is the housing plan that was previously put out by the chamber a year ago. So the other piece I'll just say quickly, and I know we'll get to it, is there's plenty of funding around. That infrastructure bill that was done at the federal level of $1 trillion, rolled out at $200 billion a year for the next 6 years, creates some tremendous opportunities, not only for Massachusetts, but for our country. And we have ability to access some of that money, particularly here on the South Shore, so we can build out some of these infrastructure needs that we've waited for a period of time.
Peter, this $1.2 trillion that Joe speaks of, I mean, would it take a collaborative approach to tap into those funds in order to be able to build, to work on the infrastructure of the South Shore?
Well, you certainly need coalition and political support to get any of that funding, whether it's federal funding or state funding. Mm. Increasingly, we see public officials interested in funding projects that have to do with economic development and do serve some regional purpose. Now, they might be local projects, but they could be tied into a larger regional plan. So there is a lot of money, but there'll be a lot of demand, and there's enough demand for infrastructure that money is not totally unlimited. You still have to make a good case for it. There's got to be political support. Has to be a lot of local public support in many cases, or else you're not going to build that state and federal support for the dollars. So collaboration is critical for any type of movement. It's critical for big projects and accessing public money.
Let's talk water, because I think water is a hot commodity, and we know that we've experienced drought situations here in the past three of them since 2016, this year included, 2020. How important is water and having folks be on board with the use of MWRA or other alternatives to be able to have enough water to develop?
So water, it turns out, will be a problem for most many communities on the South Shore, whether you have growth or not, for a lot of reasons. People staying at home longer because they're not going to the office 5 days a week, watering the lawns, whatever it is. If you have no new growth, water use continues to grow, and there are increasing concerns about the quality of supply that come up because the environmental standards get constantly or continuously more stringent. So there's concern about quality and then quality because of use and environmental issues that are affecting the supply of water. We preceded this report, worked with the Metropolitan Area Planning Council on looking at a narrow area of the South Shore. It was a corridor between Hanover and Weymouth along Route 3. Touched five communities, and we started with the proposition of there's a lot of land there that is developed but probably could be redeveloped for higher value purpose. And what would that mean for water supply? And do we have that capacity? And the report came back and made clear to us that even though it did not study the entire region, what we saw in that area was going to be typical throughout most of the region, that you're going to have a lot of pressure on your existing supplies. And we've got to think about water management maybe a little differently. And when you do that, it can be expensive. And so the theory we had was, do we have the water supply to support development? Turned into kind of the opposite, that we're going to need development to support larger, more sophisticated water, wastewater systems,
right,
to protect the supplies that we have. And there's going to have to be, I think, a lot of honest collaboration and work between groups that might be seen as adversarial interests in the past. Business groups and environmental groups, looking at how do we better manage this resource so that we can grow and protect what we have.
Ken, if you are just tuning in, we're privileged to have Peter Foreman, CEO, President of the South Shore Chamber of Commerce, and Joe Sullivan. He chairs the South Shore Chamber's Transportation Advisory Group, former Braintree Mayor. And we're talking about an infrastructure report. This is a priorities report for 2022, but with the eye towards 2030, trying to building this out. Can we talk targeted areas? Are there,
sure,
areas of development that we can talk about that are in this report?
Yes. So one of the things we did, and again, this is an agenda for us. This isn't telling municipalities what they have to do, but infrastructure is expensive. New roads, new ramps, water mains, sewer systems, water systems, they're all expensive. And a lot of thinking is that the one way you reduce those costs and reduce operating costs is have them in more concentrated areas. And that means concentrating some of your development. So when we looked at the South Shore and some of the areas that we thought were ripe for a lot of interesting redevelopment and helping make more interesting communities, we noticed that these, with maybe one exception, these are not owned. These are not single properties. They're not owned by one person. And what we saw are development zones. These are areas that in almost every case, cross over a town line, so it's neighboring areas in a town, many different property owners. But when you look at it, a map, you think, this is an area where you can have a good concentration of activity, of mixed uses, even residential uses, almost building new communities in some of these areas. And that's where we ought to target some of the chamber's thinking about how do we promote development and infrastructure planning so that you are concentrating that activity in a relatively compact area to reduce the costs.
So specifically, I think I'd mentioned a little earlier, you know, to Peter's point, these are large stretches of land in terms of Route 44 in Plymouth, and I think it goes down to Route 105, where you really have some great opportunities to bring in some new infrastructure to help grow access to these properties. Route 3A, you know, from Quincy Center, which has been under, you know, significant growth under Mayor Koch's leadership, and Speaker Mariano also being very helpful in those efforts. Bringing that through Weymouth along 3A, Broad Street, and area off the landing is another section. But coming down 3A through to Hingham is a great spot. And so You know, there are areas that we identify in here. I would say in my town of Braintree, from the landing, which I mentioned earlier in my remarks in terms of its revitalization, coming along Quincy Avenue and connecting up through Quincy in that way is an opportunity. That's not identified in our report. And to what Peter had said earlier, there are some real good opportunities here. We identify four or five that we think have the potential for some sustainable growth and with it added infrastructure for those particular areas. But it's mixed amongst a series of towns. And if there is that regional collaboration, then I think there's real benefits to be gained for not only the area, but for the individual towns as well.
Yeah, when you said that, first thing I think of is Union Point, the old Naval Air Station that's shared by, Abington, Rockland, and Weymouth. Right. That's the first one that I think of right off the top where you got, you know, three communities are discussing. But the thing is that I think myself, I've seen my share of municipal meetings.
Sure.
The conversations, right. Planning board meetings, zoning board meetings, right. And the group of people who come out and say, right. You know, we don't know if we want this, even though that there is such a need.
So let me take a little bit of that angst away, because there is...
You're
speaking on behalf of those who would be...
I'm just speaking on what I've witnessed.
No, and I can appreciate that. Okay. I get you're representing the angst that you've witnessed.
Channeling it.
You know, so... Like, for example, the monies that are available to us today, a lot of people, when they look at development, think, what's it going to cost? Number one, to Peter's point about water being potentially a limited resource. So if you can build out infrastructure, not only water, but also roads, and add capacity in terms of being able to accommodate this new growth, the cost of providing that service is valuable. And it's achieved through some federal monies that are available. I think, you know, the questions that those of us who've been in public life get frequently is, how are we going to pay for this? There are monies available to us that we can identify, and if we work regionally, we can secure on behalf of our regions. And we should be taking those steps so that it isn't just a burden to the local taxpayer. It is actually federal dollars that are available to us with some state support as well. So these are the types of things. When you can identify funding, then you can generally make a project work.
So, Kevin, it's actually funny when you go around to these meetings when there are specific projects, and you will hear people saying, don't change a thing. We don't want our town to change. We don't want to lose the unique features of it. And the irony is, with the dynamics of communities, is if you don't grow, you start to fall apart. And so the people who say, put everything in a time capsule, don't change anything, I want to keep it the way it is, if you don't have growth, they're going to lose what they have. And you need to have growth at some level in order to protect the unique features of a community and that DNA of a community that everyone likes. Yeah, there might be some new people coming into town. There might be some new businesses. The blacksmith shop might close, and you might have a car dealership instead. But the basic dynamics can be the same. So our message out there is the South Shore is a special place to live. And all of our communities are, for the most part, all really well-run. They're great places to live. You add it up, and it's just a collection between Boston and the canal of live anywhere you want on the South Shore. What you don't have in your immediate town, you've got 10 minutes away. But just come to the South Shore. You're going to find these great communities. And we want to preserve that, but we don't think you preserve it by trying to make time stand still. You gotta move forward and constantly have new investment to preserve those qualities of life.
I'm gonna step aside just for a moment. We're gonna come back with more from Peter and Joe. And we'll even take your calls. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Go
ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both, because being connected feels good, and who doesn't need more of that these days? Don't miss Talk with Francesca Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
McWiggins Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McWiggins makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McWiggins Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McWigginsPub.com.
Plymouth County is a large area stretching from just south of Boston down to the Cape Cod Canal. I'm Alex Bazanson. Join me and my guests for countywide coverage, everything from the Mayflower Landing to the most recent town meetings, how national news affects us locally, and how things that happen in Plymouth County affect the rest of the South Shore. Tune in for All About Plymouth County tomorrow night at 7 here on 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Also, more of Peter Foreman and Joe Sullivan. They're here. We talked about the Infrastructure Priorities Report of 2022. And we're going to have you, we're going to ask you to call in if you have any questions in regards to infrastructure, especially here in the South, on the South Shore, regionally, some of your concerns or maybe some of your thoughts as to listening up to our conversation here. Maybe you have a question that Joe or Peter could answer in regards to the report and where we're going with this particular report. Because I believe that they want public input. They want to hear from folks and get your you know, insight on this. We're coming out of a pandemic. I won't know for sure until December when we see if we're all back wearing masks. But, you know, they're saying we're going to be, you know, it's going to be an endemic thing. How will the recovery from the pandemic have an effect? Well, how will it impact the South Shore when it comes to infrastructure?
Boy, we think quite a few ways, and we tried, as we were listening to people on infrastructure, also listening and reading a lot about what may happen after the pandemic recovery with location of businesses, size of office buildings, where people were going to work, how they were going to work, where they were going to live. And I'll let Joe talk a little bit about how post-recovery may affect the MBTA. But in terms of population, we were beginning to see prior to the pandemic that generational shift of people who, you know, 20 years ago, maybe in their late 20s, would move out of the city to the suburbs. That had been delayed a few years because people weren't forming families as quickly. We were just seeing pre-COVID an uptick of young people now in their early 30s, not late 20s, moving down into the South Shore, which is what we want. They bring a lot of talent, skills, and that will attract business and support our businesses. We think that's going to accelerate. for a lot of reasons that people have read. What we don't think will accelerate is the big upheaval of corporate offices out of the city into the suburbs. We'll see a little bit of that just as people get priced out of Boston. They'll look further down. But we're not going to see that kind of wholesale business relocation coming out of this. But that means we've got to focus more on how we attract smaller businesses, how we start businesses here. We do think the not everybody is going to be remote forever, but we believe that this idea of flexible work hours and people maybe having to go into the office 3 or 4 days a week, work from home or work closer to home 1 or 2 days a week, is for real. It will be long lasting, and that's going to affect local traffic in some ways. May even affect local water use in some ways. But that uptick is going to mean a little bit more local traffic congestion. It also means that people now, if they're not having to go into the major work hubs like Boston 5 days a week, will be willing to look a little further out than they might have before the pandemic as to where they'll live. So they might trade a little longer commute if they don't have to take it as often during the week in order to get the type of housing they want. At one level, that's good. That makes the South Shore more attractive because it'll encourage more people to come down. On the other hand, we're now competing with a lot of other suburban, even rural communities that we might not have been competing for pre-COVID when people had to commute 5 days a week.
So we know the T faces some significant challenges operationally. Money that was provided to them from the federal government, much of it was used for capital improvements, not as much on the operational side. There were, over the past year, a number of people who left the MBTA post-COVID. Quite frankly, just didn't want to do the job anymore. And there were over 900 vacancies as we speak at the MBTA. So if the listening audience wants to help us in terms of trying to move transportation forward, there are plenty of jobs available at the MBTA. We also know that the MBTA, we believe, has learned from this experience. And to underline Peter's point, people aren't going to be going into the office. Most people are not going to be returning to the office 5 days a week. But they will be going back to the office come this fall, assuming there's no continuation surge of COVID, surge, any of that nature. And so with the flex work schedule, the MBTA needs to flex itself as well, become much more flexible. And an example of that would be you have the monthly pass for MBTA riders. You know, they know they're going in every day prior to COVID. That monthly pass was a discounted program for the usage, 4 weeks, 4 weeks a month and 22 days a month in terms of going into the office. Maybe that now becomes a quarterly pass, where you have a certain number of trips amongst that quarterly trap. Maybe it's 60 trips or 75 trips over 3 months, as opposed to, just the monthly pass because the cost of the monthly pass, while discounted, is still more than what most riders will use. And so the T needs to understand that as well. And then the MBTA reduced operations of the train service subsequent to COVID, and then more recently with the FTA rulings, they reduced the service even further. So I think we think they need to think more strategically about their schedule and look at really where the demands are, what particular days have higher demands, and increase the frequency of train availability on those days. And then unique to the South Shore is water transportation. The Hull service was pretty much eliminated. Hingham service was reduced. We've been able to recapture some of that. Quincy, up from the Four River area, was totally taken away a few years back. Restoration of that water service would be a benefit for South Shore. That's a bit of a unique service. I know Salem has that service as well. Lynn has experimented with it. But those of us who live on the coast, and I know a lot of Braintree folks who would take a ride down to Hingham, do a reverse commute, and jump on the boat to go to Rose Wharf frequently in terms of getting into Boston. So increasing the water transport, being more flexible in terms of the schedule and really looking at demand needs, as well as being more flexible with the rider in terms of the cost, about adding like quarterly passes or semi-annual passes, those types of things, I think will help the T perform better going forward.
If folks do want to call in, if you have a question that you want to ask or something that you want to pose that's going to help the conversation, 781-837-4900. Again, 837-4900. Exchange is 781 if you want to get in for a moment. Ask a question, depending on the popularity of the number of folks who call in. If you happen to be one of one, well, then you can stay on. But if we have a collection of folks, then it's a matter of asking the question and then moving along so we can let other folks ask questions. When Richard Rosa was on earlier, he had made a comment in regards to workforce and knowing that, you know, that's it's hard to get employees. And we were talking earlier about the pandemic recovery and how does a good, robust workforce compared to a struggle that we're having right now in being able to attain employees, how is that going to be the make or break point when it comes to this infrastructure report?
You know, it's ultimately all about getting people who can support your businesses and work for businesses or start their own businesses. We do have this demographic downshift. This is this was known well before COVID. It's accelerated during COVID, and it's a game of competing for workers. We see two primary types of workers that we're trying to grab with housing. Younger people coming from outside the area to the South Shore, and older workers, baby boomers who want to downsize their homes, who want to keep them here because they're still very productive, and many of them are very entrepreneurial and still creating businesses, so we want to keep them. It's all a game about housing. We've got to change our housing mix on the South Shore. It is predominantly large lot, single family detached. That's not what the market is looking for in large, totally. There's a large segment of the market that is looking for smaller lot, more compact neighborhood housing, multifamily housing. And that's what we've been working on for a few years. That's higher density, more people per square feet. And that requires the infrastructure, the interchange, intersection changes, or some local road widening in some cases, if you have enough of it, or new short distance roads in some areas where you have development. And it may mean water, wastewater. But a lot of this is to support the housing that we need to get workforce. And the transportation, the hard look that we did on this report was we changed our focus a little bit from looking predominantly at getting in and out of Boston for our residents and started thinking more about how do we get workers to come down here. Because we want workers from outside the area to support jobs here. That's how we'll help the workforce. And that means, how do you do a reverse commute? These trains run both ways. But in the morning, they come back from Boston empty. Mm. And at night, they go back to Boston empty. So how do you get them at the end of a red line, for example, to a place of work when you don't have, you know, the subway system that Boston has?
Ken, if you're tuned in, you're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Peter Foreman, CEO, President of the South Shore Chamber of Commerce, former Braintree Mayor, Chairman of the South Shore Chamber's Transportation Advisory Group, Joe Sullivan here talking about this particular report, the South Shore, looking ahead to 2030. How about, let's talk a little strategy here. And, you know, if housing is a big issue. We know that the governor, every time he's done the State of the Commonwealth address, he's mentioned it, that the housing stock is down. Is it a matter of having a strategy like Brockton does, where they're building a lot of their housing near the, you know, the commuter rail, and having that, they have a strategy in place? Do we have to have more communities that are along the MBTA rail line having strategies like that to assist?
Sure, and I think Bob, Mayor Sullivan's done a nice job there. We know with our conversations with his predecessor, Bill Carpenter, that there was a focus on some downtown activity, and Mayor Sullivan has accelerated that now. And I think many communities have that ability to site housing in and around transportation. The administration, the Baker administration, has been very vocal about that, as you mentioned, Kevin. And they've also put money that is now available that, quite frankly, wasn't available when I was mayor, despite the fact that we were trying to create more housing in Branchy. And we did 682 units over a 12-year period. I wish we could have done more of that and taken advantage of our location with some more housing. As Peter mentioned, the different types of housing that could become available for families now. But now the government, state government, is offering up to $5 million in terms of locating some housing within a half mile of a transportation center. And so there are a lot of communities that can lend themselves to accessing that money. I think it was planned to be modified a little bit, because not every community was supposed to take a vote for it in terms of accepting the requirements around that type of housing approach. Not all did, and so I think it's being somewhat modified. There was a local option attached to it previously, and I think that's being somewhat modified. But there is monies available now, today, in 2022, that weren't available as recently as 2020, 2019, to have the state step up and assist in giving communities money if they were to establish housing within a half mile of a transportation center. And I should say, doesn't have to necessarily be a center. Transportation access, I believe you can even do it if you have access to a bus line that would take you to, say, Quincy Center Station, or in our case, Braintree T Station, or even the commuter rail. And so you're right, Brockton's done a lot of that. Quincy has done quite a bit of that. Weymouth has done some of that along Route 18. They've got access to a community rail station. So those are more of the immediate ones here. Cordage Park did a lot of housing. They've got a short strip, station that has a short run, I should say, from the Kingston station over in Cordage Park. But they've added a lot of housing, too. I don't think they qualified for the money because that housing was built before. Not as recent as some of the others. But there is funding available now that was not available previously.
One of the strategies you're seeing in a lot of towns is how they're using housing to anchor old downtowns or retail space that they're afraid of losing. So in Hanover and Kingston, you're seeing the old malls that weren't surviving because retail was changing. You're seeing those communities accept housing right next to those malls so that they can essentially become the new town centers or town downtowns,
right?
That ironically the malls helped kill many years ago. They're now trying to recreate that Main Street by having people. You're seeing other towns look at their town centers that they want to get some new life and saying, it's not about marketing coming to our Main Street. It's about getting more people living within walking distance of Main Street to fill up those restaurants and support some of the services that all the residents would like to see kept there. That's an example of what I said earlier. People who want to keep their town looking and feeling special, you have to have that new investment. Otherwise, you know, the downtowns can become a ghost town and you're not going to have anything.
Let me pick up on that. Our rebranding of the landing that I mentioned in my earlier comments,
yes,
was the cornerstone of that was the Greenbush Station. And we created 170 units of housing on the Braintree side, and I think a similar amount if you go further up Commercial Street into Weymouth. So you've got about 300 new residences in that area that didn't exist 4 or 5 years ago. And that brings to it a level of vibrancy, as well as new restaurants and other economic opportunities. We had, when I came into office, we had a project that was gone bankrupt, just adjacent to the MBTA station, a little bit of a five-minute walk, now became Jonathan's Landing, over 300 units of condominium living, all market rate at the time, and still remains that way. We built close to 60 units of housing with some affordable units in four separate smaller projects up into South Braintree Square, which is a 10-minute walk to the T station. And so there is availability, there's a need for housing, and the availability of public transportation to support that housing become, you know, really attached in a significant way. People are looking to, you know, live within walking distance of public transportation, and that's always going to be a need.
Again, number 781-837-4900. If you, in fact, you want to get in on the conversation, if there's something that you've heard, but you have a question, or maybe there's something you want to share that is insightful, feel free to call in. But in the meanwhile, I'll ask this. This is something, other considerations in the report, that is utilities and climate change. Mm-hmm. How do these play a role in infrastructure and the priorities?
They will play a role. We did not spend as much time. We spent very little time on either of those. We were focused more on the water and transportation, but realized part of this mix in the future will be energy supply. And this was an agenda, again, to the chamber to follow for the next few years. So one of the markers we laid down is the chamber's got to take a look at energy. And also the climate issues, because they will affect infrastructure, whether it's parkways, retaining walls, water supplies, wastewater pipes with inflow and infiltration, issues that you have, threatening water supplies because of climate change. Those are all things that we felt in the process of this, the business community and the chamber need to do more work on, and laid that out as an agenda for ourselves.
And this new federal bill that was passed literally a year ago in the United States Senate and then followed up in the fall, this $1.2 trillion bill that I mentioned earlier, that has all types of environmental considerations with it and conditions, I dare say, in terms of what gets built and how it gets built. When you look at the Cape Cod bridges that are under conversation now to get rebuilt, there's a series of environmental conditions that need to be met that weren't there when those bridges were built, 100 years ago. We're looking at a site, the former Braintree Electric Light Department plant administrative building on the Four River Basin, which is now hopefully going to be redeveloped into some housing, has a number of environmental considerations to it because it is right on the water as well. So these types of infrastructure improvements that need to be made, particularly in the area of housing, have with it now environmental considerations that we need to be sensitive to, just in terms of sustainability.
Gentlemen, is there anything that we have not taken a moment to discuss and share, or anything that you want to reiterate during this conversation that, again, that will drive the point home in regards to the hard work that was put into pulling this together?
Yeah, the unknowns about the future. This is economic development is a constantly ongoing process.
Evolving, yeah.
We know that as we take on one issue, there will be some other issues. There will be new issues that come up. We're going to refer to our roadmap here, our agenda on how we address those. But just that the economy is dynamic. It goes beyond town borders. It goes beyond one project. And this was intended to be a framework for how the business community the next few years on the South Shore is going to try to address some of this.
This is not a one-size-fits-all report. We understand the uniqueness of each community that makes up the South Shore, but we also understand and appreciate how important we are as a region to the state's economy. And as we think of our future, I'll just dare say with a bit of a pun here, infrastructure, transportation is all about movement. We need to move in a direction that's going to not only safeguard our region, but also allow us to have a prosperous future. And this is a report that I hope people will give some consideration to. It collaborates closely with the housing report that was done. These two pieces alone, I think, creates an environment where we need further discussion. Again, there's funding available to make a lot of this happen. We just need to have the will to make it happen.
Who are some of the folks that you maybe want to take a moment to mention who are instrumental in at least pulling this information together to be able to kind of present it to some of the stakeholders regionally that you could share it with and the folks who are tuned in?
That is really dangerous because
you'll miss somebody.
I'll miss somebody, and we'll run out of time.
Let me interrupt. Let me say thank you to Peter Foreman for his leadership of the South Shore Chamber and the South Shore Chamber team.
Very nice,
as well as the board of directors, all of whom are business owners, many of them public officials who contributed to the dialogue of this report. But really, without Peter's intelligence, integrity, and promotion of the South Shore, we wouldn't have gotten this report completed in such a thorough manner.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I'll not accept that. The reason that I'm not going to name everybody is the reason we can do what we do at the Chamber is because of hundreds of dedicated business professionals, community leaders, government officials who care about the South Shore and in one way or another are contributing to our work in this agenda or in their own communities working along a similar path just within their towns. And that's what makes our work possible, and they can't do it themselves, which is why they support a chamber of commerce to try to pull it together a little bit, but it's really because of all those people, which is why I can't name them all in 5 minutes.
Sure. As we wrap up, we get 2 minutes left here. What happens with this report being published? What happens next? Now that it's out there for public consumption, what's next?
Well, we're going to go on the road a little bit, Peter and I.
You're a great show, the two of you, really.
I think, we've reached out to other chamber leaders. We want to meet with them and just discuss our report and see how it perhaps intertwines with some of the recommendations that other chambers have made in this area. So we're not, you're our first stop, Kevin, beyond what we did last Tuesday morning here on WATD in the morning. But you're our first stop, and we've got more, more conversation to be had. But this is also a listening tour. We're not just talking. We're going to spend some time having folks digest this report, hopefully understand its meaningfulness, and in doing so have some further thoughts for us so we can strengthen even what we've put together now.
And it'll be the hunt for collaborating partners in government, out-of-government nonprofits in the area or out of the area who understand what we're trying to do, like the principles behind it, see some great land use ideas here, and we'll come up with some ideas of how we can advance it. We'll partner with them. There'll be pieces of legislation or specific individual projects that we'll get behind. So it becomes a process of several years of individual steps.
Well, I will say to close this out, and that is that I will offer you, I have another source, another medium, if you want to take it to that, if you need to add a visual to it, I'd be more than happy to help you produce something like that that you'd be able to share with neighboring communities and their PEG access stations so that their residents and their community members can be able to digest this.
Sure.
And maybe they'll be flush with questions that they can, in fact, seek you out and share.
That's great.
That's great.
Thank you. Excellent.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for being my guest.
Thank you, Kevin.
Can't wait to see you back again.
Always great to see you.
With more conversation. And we can't wait until next week at 6:15 p.m. We will have more conversation, albeit it'll be a brief one because we have a political forum next week. So to be in a brief, it'll be economy size Monday Night Talk. But until next week, have yourself a great evening.